Hi everyone, my name is Darren Griffith and you're very welcome to the second episode of the recently launched LUSK Athletic Club podcast. Just to say many thanks for all the encouragement and positive feedback to date. We're delighted that we have listeners tuning in from all around the country and many international listeners, including, would you believe, two from Kenya. So I know Kenya is a country of 53 million, but of course I'd like to think Kipchoge is one of the two tuning in. So in today's episode, I talk to Matt Shields, country manager for Park Run, and Colm Wall, who interviews LUSK AC member Stephen Brennan about undertaking and completing the Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc. Before we move on to the interviews, I'd like to share some LUSK AC news. So of course, you still have the opportunity to sign up for and take part in the LUSK 4-mile, which is certainly the best 4-mile in the country. Please sign up at Eventmaster, follow and share our social media pages, and tag and tell all your friends. We're also still looking for club members to volunteer on the day, so please contact Annette Foy if interested. We'd also like to congratulate Una Gaines, Karen Green and Jer McHale, who took third place in their age category at the Rahini 5-mile. Also, congratulations to all the athletes who represented LUSK AC at the National Indoor League, with the men's team making the final at Abbottstown on the 11th of February. Significantly for the club, this was the first year that LUSK AC entered both a men's and women's team. So let's kick off with my interview with Matt Shields. I'm really delighted to be joined by Matt Shields, the Park Run Country Manager and Park Run Health and Wellbeing Project Manager. So Matt, you're very welcome. Thanks for agreeing to talk to us this evening.
Not at all. Thanks for having me.
So look, before I start, I mean, I know you're a very accomplished runner and in particular marathon runner, but can you please tell us a little bit about your love for running or your running background?
Yeah, well, you say I'm an accomplished, and probably nowadays, yes, I would be. But certainly when I was running marathons, I was, I think I was the sixth fastest in my club. So like times were different back in the 80s. And I'd describe myself as a good club runner. So it is a good club runner. I wouldn't have seen myself as elite.
Okay. A good club runner that came third in the Dublin Marathon, is that?
Yeah. Third or fifth. I thought it's that long ago.
Okay. A modest marathon runner. We'll agree on that. But yeah, so what is your local club then, please?
I've been through a few clubs in my life, but the one that I've been with for about the last 20 or 30 years is North Belfast Harriers.
Fantastic.
And I really went to North Belfast Harriers because they were the club that were specialising in marathons. And as I alluded to earlier, like at one stage, there was a team there that I was probably the sixth fastest. There were six men in the club, at least six men in the club that were faster than 220.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So look, we're here to talk about Parkrun, and most of our runners that are listening here today will be familiar with Parkrun. Many of our LUSK AC club members, for example, are regular runners and volunteers at the Ardgillan and Newbridge Parkruns. But for our listeners that are less familiar, can you please tell us a little bit about Parkrun?
Oh, Parkrun. Well, Parkrun grew from a gentleman that 14, 15 years ago, basically he had got an injury. He was having some personal problems. He had lost his job. He was feeling a wee bit depressed. So what he'd done was he came up with this idea that he said to his running mates, look, I'll hold a time trial for you every Saturday. So it is. And in exchange for that, he says, I'll only ask for one thing. You join me afterwards in the caf for a cup of coffee. And he was thinking about his own mental health and socializing and everything else. That is basically the seed that was behind Parkrun. And the same ethos that was behind that is true till Parkrun today. It's not really about the run. It's about the socializing. It's about the mental health. It's about being with other people. It's as like any time trial. It's as, you know, the only pressure you're putting yourself under is the pressure you put yourself under. And that's still very much the feel that we would like to see around all, we do see around all of the parkruns.
Certainly, absolutely. Everyone heads straight for the coffee shop in Newbridge, for example, after the park run, which is wonderful to see. And then, how did you personally get involved with park run?
Straight away, yeah. My career, you say, was two parts. At one part, yes, I was this marathon runner, club runner. And I'd reached a certain age, let's say, and my daughters live in London. So I was over in London and I was looking for Google for a race, and the only thing I could find was this thing called Parkrun. So I thought, okay, it'll have to do. So I headed off till Old Deer Park, and I arrived, like any race you do, you arrive, you know, an hour beforehand, get registered, warm up, and hey, look, place is empty. Bloody hell, it must have been cancelled. So it is. So I spotted a boy putting flags out. And I proceeded to follow him around and eventually had a chat with him. He says, yeah, take a handful of these and give me a hand. So I ended up setting up the park run, taking part, sitting in the cafe afterwards, watching them do results, having a great time, and then coming home. So I come back to Belfast and said, hey, you know, we can do that. And from that, then we got involved and engaged and sent messages, and eventually they come over, trained us, and we started the first park run in the Waterworks in Belfast.
That's absolutely brilliant. And note to our listeners, if you attend park runs in London or in the UK, they start at 9 o'clock, because I arrived 30 minutes late for a park run in London and I finished last, as you might imagine. But yeah, fantastic. Great to be a park run tourist and to get a cool job after attending a park run. So look, my next question stems from a recent excellent article in the Irish Times. And essentially, why is it good news that the average park run times are getting slower?
Well, when you say, like I say, what we're looking to do is we're not necessarily looking to breed the next Olympian. What we're really trying to do is to get people out socializing together, you know, in the green spaces on a Saturday morning for health and well-being benefits. And certainly the people that would benefit most is not your average club runner, who is very, very welcome. But I'd say they're already in a pretty good place. The people that we're trying to get out are the people that are inactive, slower, maybe a bit overweight. And these people will be slower. So if the average time's coming down, obviously the blend of people that we're getting at park run is also changing. We're getting more and more of the people that we're actually trying to reach. And that's why essentially this is good news.
Brilliant. The park run community members are people who run, walk, volunteer and spectate. So could you please maybe discuss the benefits of volunteering with park run? And I suppose the same probably applies to clubs. And I know you've perhaps studied this a little bit, but just in general terms.
Yeah, well, we see participation as not only just running, like participation is walking, running, volunteering. They're all a valued form of participation, and they all bring their own health and well-being benefits. And in fact, if you think about it, you know, if we're really looking for breaking down social isolation and getting people out and getting people talking to each other and this type of thing, like volunteering is actually where you would have the biggest interaction with other people. So it's really no surprise that, you know, we run a health and well-being survey. I think in 2018, there's about 6,500 people in Ireland answered it. And we put all the results together, analysed them, done all the stats. And the outcome of this was that the people that are actually reporting the biggest health benefits of participation at parkrun were the volunteers. Now, when you sit and look at it and think about the interactions, yeah, that's maybe not surprising. And the wonderful thing about volunteering is that, you know, you could maybe turn around and say, look, I couldn't run 5K. That's fine. You know, come along and walk 5K. I couldn't walk 5K. Okay, well, come along and walk one lap. Well, I don't think I could do that. Well, you can definitely volunteer. Everybody can volunteer. So this is a level of entry. This is an entry level participation that actually anybody, no matter what your ability is, can do. And it's actually the most beneficial form of participation as well.
That's really, really excellent. And I know myself from volunteering, I know more names and more faces from standing on the sidelines with the barcode recorder and timers, etc. So yeah, absolutely. It's a really great way.
At least people come up with e-cards with their name on it. Ah, so that's what they call you.
So do please, everyone, consider coming along and volunteering. I think the recommendation is 1 in 10 or 11 runs as well, if you're an active runner. Isn't that correct?
Well, at one stage we would have said, you know, could you consider maybe volunteering so many times in every runs? But we don't really want to promote volunteering any longer as a form of giving back, a form of duty. We want to promote volunteering as something that you do for yourself, something you do for your own health and well-being. Don't worry about giving back to the community. Don't worry about, you know, supporting other people or that you have a debt to pay. No, the debt's to yourself. Volunteer for your own health.
Nicely said, Matt. Nicely said. So look, I know Park Run are always looking for ways to innovate, such as the Park Walk for Park Run. So hopefully you're in a position to, and perhaps you could share with us what's next on the agenda for Parkrun. You don't have to give away any secrets if you don't want to.
I don't think there's a whole lot to give away. Like, we're interested in all of the different types of long-term health. And like I say, you know, volunteering reaches people of all abilities. So we would be looking for ways to make volunteering at Parkrun more accessible and getting maybe, say, corporates and different organisations to encourage their people to volunteer and maybe find some way of rewarding them. We'd love to explore that sort of things with different corporate bodies. We're also looking at engaging with the different serious illnesses. Like we have an initiative, so we have that we at park runs once at select park runs once a month, like 5K your way, where people that have been touched by cancer come meet together as a meeting point with peer support. So they do as a sort of a cancer recovery or cancer support. We would love to see that grow to other areas. We would love to have something similar to do with cardiac conditions. And of course, mental health is a big issue. I think everything about Parkrun helps with mental health, but you know, we'd like to do more. So going forward, yeah, greater concentration on bringing these people that you mentioned that are bringing the time down. Yeah, we'd like to bring it down further.
Sounds good. And, you know, thanks so much for, you know, highlighting the benefits of volunteering and volunteering for yourself. I suppose one of the challenges a lot of athletics clubs have, for example, is that they do rely on club members and parents to volunteer to keep the clubs active and thriving. And as you pointed out, you know, you benefit yourself greatly from volunteering and meeting people and getting out and about. Yeah.
Yeah. And from being involved like in clubs myself and in different Couch to 5Ks or even in Parkrun, I think the people that struggle to get into activity are actually more likely to volunteer than maybe the people that are extremely, say, active elite. You know, certainly within the running club, we would have found that the people that we brought through the Couch to 5K and come into the club and are appreciative of having come across that threshold actually are the people that are really keen to come back in and help others. So it is. So I think for the clubs, embracing Couch to 5K, engaging with the park run actually is a rich vein of volunteers.
Brilliant. Thank you. So look, I mean, I'd love to finish with some kind of quick fire questions, maybe some fun facts on Parkrun, if you don't mind. So it's about 5 or 6 questions.
You may well find me out here, but go for it.
No, I think we'll see how you get on. So look, number of active Parkruns in Ireland.
106 5K and 29 juniors. 30 on Sunday.
That's amazing. Newest park run in Ireland.
The
latest one.
The last one to start was a junior, let me think. The last 5K to start with Feathered, and the last junior to start, I think, were St Fergal's.
Fantastic. So Feathered in County Wexford.
I may have that wrong.
Don't worry. It sounds good.
In which case, I'll be getting, you know, all sorts of texts and emails later, but don't worry.
Don't worry. We believe you. And most popular park run in the country?
By popular, do you mean numbers?
I do indeed mean numbers.
So as well, probably Marley.
Marley Park. Okay, yeah. Fantastic. I haven't been. I'll have to go visit. And then oldest active Irish park runner.
Oh, no, I couldn't really answer that one. I know there's people in their 90s involved. Exactly how far there is in their 90s, it wouldn't be gentlemanly to ask some of these.
Absolutely. 90 sounds good. Highest number of park runs completed by one person in Ireland?
Island of Ireland?
Yeah, that works, of course, yeah.
I think I saw last week that it's about 527 or something and around that. So it is. There's three gentlemen in the north of Ireland that have been very competitive in trying to get to the first 500. And people still compare their achievements. But I think they're sitting in around about 527 or something like that.
Okay, that's very impressive.
Yeah, there'll be a competition, I'd say, coming soon for the first Republic of Ireland 500 park runs. It can't be too far away. I'd say it's within the next year. We should see 500 shirts appearing in Ireland.
Brilliant. So watch that space. Mm-hmm. Then funniest park run anecdote?
I don't know where to start. You asked me earlier, what's the most popular park run? I said popular by numbers. Popular by a destination and experience is probably Burr Island. And I remember they asked us to go out to Burr Island to, you know, meet them to discuss a park run. So we come across and we sat and we're in front of a committee. They said, how many people live in the island? I think it was about 160 or 180. And most of them were like pension age. And we said, and we were sort of looking at each other and said, this will not work. So we went through a long list of questions and reasons why and everything else. But they had an answer for everything. Every single thing we put down, they had an answer for. Left us nowhere to go. That's okay. We'll go away and we'll work at this. So on the way home, we said, I can't see this working. Most popular park run in Ireland, I would say, is Burr Island. So never judge. Never judge what's possible.
Yeah, I'd imagine there's small communities. There's a great demand for park runs, and is it all big city based, or do you find that there is more park runs around the country in smaller communities? Or
well, park runs actually educating us all. The communities educating us all of the time, and certainly I would find that, you know, when you come into a small community, there's maybe not a lot of other things happening. You can have a very successful event within that community because it becomes the focus. It becomes something that the community focuses on. If you go to an area, say in a bigger town where there's, GAA, football, soccer, you know, a whole range of different activities to come to, then you can actually find that an event is maybe not as successful. So, you know, does success relate to the size of the community? No, you can have very, very successful events in very small communities. Like Burr Island has shown us that, and there's numerous other events around the countryside that show us that too. So it is. And I think that's also part of the unique feel of parkrun in Ireland.
Yeah. Well, I've always wanted to visit Burr Island so I can both visit and undertake a parkrun Saturday.
It's like a pilgrimage.
Yeah, yeah. So finally, I suppose it would be great if you could just share the steps to take to join the parkrun community, just for those listeners that would like to get involved.
Well, anybody that would like to come along to parkrun, it's not absolutely essential that you register, but if you do register, you'll get results and figures and all the rest of it. So basically go along to www.parkrun.ie/register and follow the steps in front of you. What you'll get back by return is a personal barcode. Print that barcode and keep it with you. You'll get 6 copies of it. Keep it with you. That personal barcode will be your entry into any park run anywhere globally, any Saturday morning.
And you'll be an official member of the park run community, and you're going to have a fantastic experience. So, look, I'd like to finish by saying, Matt, I really appreciate you coming on to talk to us. I really enjoyed talking to you. I love park run. So do most of our, if not all of our listeners, I'm sure. They soon will if they don't at the moment. So, yeah, thanks again.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Really great to chat to Matt. Next up, as promised, we have Colm Wall interviewing Stephen Brennan all about his experience undertaking the Ultra Trail Mont Blanc.
Hi, everyone. My name is Colin Wall, and delighted to be speaking to the very popular and well-known Lusk runner, Stephen Brennan. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you.
Best known in Lusk KC for your mountain and trail running. Could you tell us about mountain running in Ireland?
It's organised by IMRA, which is the Irish Mountain Running Association, which is like the AAI, but it's actually more like Lusk KC. IMRA really feels like a club. There's about maybe 1,000 people who do hill running regularly across the country. And then there's loads and loads of races, and they're dirt cheap. Like, they're only €7. And one big difference between hill running and road running is it's very sociable. Like, most people go to the pub after the races. And, you know, it's like people paying their four ball on the weekend for a euro. Like, it's a kind of, everybody has a set of people that they're trying to beat, and there's a set of people trying to beat them. And so the female over 70 is hotly contested, you know. So it's not just about the fast guys up the front, it's the whole way through the field. It's very competitive, but great fun, and everyone knows one another.
How many would be in a typical race?
Well, it could be a typical Friday or a typical Wednesday evening race. There'll be 200 people in the race. Wow. And the €7 each, and it'll be somewhere down in the Wicklow or Dublin mountains, and everyone goes out to the pub afterwards.
Okay. And how did you get into the mountain running?
I started because I started doing adventure racing, and adventure racing has cycling, mountain running, and usually has kayak, and sometimes has mountain bike and orienteering stuff. Yeah. But to get any good at it, you have to be doing a bit of mountain running. So that's how I got into it. I started doing just mountain running then, because it's great fun. It's an adrenaline rush running downhill.
What specific, do you need any specific gear to do this thing for your?
You do. You need two things. You need trail runners, and it's not like road runners that I must have 10 different pairs, right, of runners at home. All with different amount of grip and different, that are suited to different kinds of terrain.
All right.
You know, but you can get a kind of general purpose trail runner. That's important, because it give you some grip. And the second thing you need is you need a jacket, because the weather can change very fast in the mountains, and you can start, you can go out on a day, and the weather can turn nasty in an hour, and it might still be grand back in the city or back in Lusk. So okay. Yeah, that's all you really need. And it doesn't have to be expensive. You can pick up something in Decathlon.
Yeah.
You know.
One of the most famous trail mountain races is the Ultra Trail Mont Blanc race. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's like in golf, like there's the four majors in golf, and there's kind of three majors in mountain running, and the UTMB is the preeminent one, really. It's a festival. It's like Cheltenham. Like, there's seven different races, and the top runners from over 10,000 of them will come to Chamonix every year to run in those races. And there's it takes over the entire region. There's seven races, so there's races kind of starting and finishing through the days and the nights. Like, the longest race is the PTL. It's 300K. And it starts on the Monday morning and finishes on the Sunday afternoon. It's a trail running mecca, you know. But anyway, the UTMB itself is kind of like the Gold Cup. It's the blue ribboned event. So it has all of the top runners, and then a massive field of, you know, with people like me, but everybody who's there has had to qualify to get in. So everybody will have done some sort of equivalent kind of race. The UTMB itself is 170K, and you're going across mountain passes. So if you add up all the cumulative altitude change between as you go around the circuit, there's 10,000 meters of climb, which is the same as 10 times up and down Carntool.
Wow.
Or up and down Mount Everest.
That'll make people think. What type of people typically take part in this kind of race? Like, Is it?
It's the same kind of people as would do a marathon, or, you know, it's ordinary people. There's nothing unusual about them other than that they tried out trail running and got the bug.
Okay. And why do you think people do this race? Or what is it about the UTMB that...
Oh, the reason to do the UTMB is, you know, it's a bit like if you start out and you start doing park run and then you sign up for 10K, before you know it, you've signed up for the Dublin Marathon. Yeah?
Yeah.
So it's a bit like that if you start doing trail running and then you might do the Morris Mullins or some other ultra or something like that.
And next thing you know, you're doing 170K up the mountain.
No. What you know then is that this is the actual ultimate.
Right.
So if you're inclined to... part of it is taking on stuff. The difference between the ultras, I guess, and marathons is that there's a significant chance you're not going to succeed in an ultra. Whereas, you know, 99% of a field finish a marathon. They might have a bad time and all that, but the vast majority of people, or almost 100% of people, finish. In an ultra, like the UTMB, there was like 900 people pulled out of that race.
How many were started?
About 2,400, something like that.
All right.
So a huge, you know, there's a huge kind of casualty rate, and that's normal. Mm. And the reason is that they're so tough. So I think you have to, I think when you're taking on stuff where there's a significant chance of failure, there's a hell of a buzz when you succeed.
Yeah, and was that your main motivation, the fact that it was going to be so hard, or only a few of us will get to the end?
You keep on kind of figuring out how far you can go. And then there's always a wonder, could you go further?
Hmm.
You know? So, and it's great. I mean, when you hit, I can remember the first time I did 100 miles. Like, it was an absolutely amazing experience. I mean, I would never have thought that 100 miles was possible, you know? But it turns out it is.
Hmm. And how do you prepare? I'm sure everyone would be interested in that. How do you prepare for like 100 miles, 170K up a mountain pass? Where do you start?
Well, what I did, I mean, there's a couple of things I did. One was I was doing lots of back-to-back long days in Wicklow on weekends. I might do a six-hour hike followed by an eight-hour hike, or the other way around. The gnarliest mountains I could find,
yeah,
up and down them. So a lot of it's hiking. And then for the race itself, I went over and I had an extended holiday over on the in the area. And I didn't spend that much time on the course, but it was other places in the Alps. And a lot of it's got to do with conditioning your body for the long climbs and descents, because the descents in particular, they really hammer your legs and your feet. You know, so I went on a long hike with a heavy pack for 5 or 6 days. And you know, with a heavy pack, you first of all, you have to get up the climbs, but also on the descents, the G forces of having a pack makes it is much harder on your legs, you know. So all that was happening with conditioning. So you get to the point, right, where you can go out and do a 9 or 10 hour hike and it's not going to take that much out of you. And then the race then becomes putting three of those back to back. Yeah. And you kind of break it into, you never really, if you thought about this as, this thing is 170K and it's 10 times up and down Carntoon,
you'd never do it. Yeah.
So what you do is you think about it in, there's aid stations about every 10 miles or so, and you have a kind of schedule in mind, and you just bop from one to the other and you start just knocking them off. Okay. You know?
And then over the course of doing that, right, what were the big challenges you faced along the way? Like, you probably wanted to give up at some stage, or...
I didn't. But I had two main, well, I suppose I had three issues, but two were more important. coming out of Cormayor, which is the halfway point, there's a steep climb coming out of Cormayor, and it was Saturday afternoon. It was actually Saturday around 12 o'clock, around noon. So it was hot. And like, I was really well conditioned, right? So when going up a really steep hill, and both my legs started to cramp. Like, I was way ahead of schedule. So I had under no time pressure at all. Mm. Just after halfway, and I'm starting to cramp. And I thought, this is, it can't be conditioning. So it had to be electrolytes. So I was way ahead of schedule. So when I got to the next aid station, I sat down, I ate some tuck biscuits. And I spent about 20 minutes cooling down, drank loads, electrolytes, all that. And then I set off. And the next section was a long balcony trail along Val Ferre. And I had intended on running that section and making up some time. Mm. But I kind of changed to, no, what I'm going to do is hike it and keep my core temperature under control so as to keep the cramps at bay. So after about 2 hours of hiking, I got the first whiff of a cold breeze coming off the glacier. So, great, temperature is back down, so I could start running again. That was the first big problem. Then the last big problem is I had the same issue on the very last climb, about 8K from the finish. There's an area where for about 2 hours I had run out of water. There's no water up there and there's no shade. And the sun was beating down. And I knew at that stage I had to finish in the bag as long as I didn't either fall or cramps. So, but I was out of water and it was hot. But I was so far ahead of schedule that I had loads of time. I could slow down. There was no problem. So I wasn't under any pressure.
Did you have a time? You must have had obviously a time in mind then.
Well, no, I was trying to finish. The barrier, overall barrier is 46 and a half hours. Okay. And that's what I wanted to, beat. But I was way ahead of it. Like, yeah. I was miles ahead. At one point, I was about 4 hours ahead of schedule. So there's a funny video on this that Rich sent to me. There's a guy, Ben Parks, who did a video on YouTube of his race. He had a disastrous race. He pulled out after about 30 miles. But I put in a cameo appearance on his video at the bottom of the first climb. You know, he gets to the top of the first climb and he just announced, well, I'm out of my fish out of water here. I'm a road runner rather than a trail runner. But I've done a bit of road running. I'm a 225 marathoner.
Oh, proper elite runner then.
Yeah, and Muggins is running with him. So in theory, I maybe went out a bit too fast.
And you touched on earlier on, how much support is there along the route or with water stations? Is there people around?
It's an absolute carnival all through France, right? You go up the top of a mountain at 2 a.m. and somebody's got dance music playing on something. I don't know how they manage it. But so it's an absolute carnival. At the start of the race, the people are, they're 10 deep. There must be tens of thousands of people. Then once you get into Italy, it thins out, but even still, in Switzerland, it's not quite as busy as it is in France, but there's people everywhere, and they're ringing us big cowbells.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know, so it's mad. It kind of takes over the region, you know, and kind of people are there having fun, and then obviously a lot of people have supporters with them.
Yeah,
you know, so. In terms of aid stations, they're every 10 miles or so, and they'll have cheese and salami and cake and energy drink and tea and water and coffee and stuff like that. And then there's two of the aid stations where you can get a meal. You can actually lie down and go to sleep. One of the places I had pasta and bolognese sauce, small bowl.
Oh,
you know, just have some real food.
And how did you feel after it?
brilliant. I mean, this is the thing about the race. Two things really astonished me. The first thing was I was way ahead of the cutoffs. Usually when I'm running these races, it's a fight against the cutoffs the whole way, you know, and I'm hanging on by the nails. But this time I was way ahead and under no pressure, which meant that when things went wrong, I had loads of time to deal with them, you know. That was the first thing. The second thing was how I felt at the end. I mean, I still can't believe this. I felt I could have run another night. Somewhere along the line last summer, I hit a new threshold in fitness. Not in speed, just in fitness. I kind of have hit multi-day racing fitness. I was up for another night if I had to do it.
Yeah. How long did it take you to recover after that then?
It didn't take that long. Like, I think... Like, I took a week off and... Now, that said, like, you know, I didn't have enough time to prepare for the Dublin Marathon, but I still kind of tried to do it. But really, I wasn't. It's funny. I think I physically recovered in about 4 weeks completely. But I think mentally, I probably didn't recover for about 3 months. You know, that's hard to explain, maybe.
What does that mean?
You're just kind of... You can only go back to the well so many times. Like, I kind of felt, looking back on it, I had a COVID deferral for Dublin, right? But I certainly wouldn't plan on doing something like that again. You know, you can't constantly be going from one major race to another major race to another major race. You just burn out. Like, I wasn't burnt out physically, but mentally, you know, you just don't feel like racing.
And if you were to do it again next year, would you do anything differently, or how would you prepare?
The only thing I'd do differently was I left the last aid station without taking enough water and electrolytes with me. Like that was a bit ropey on that last climb, and it needn't have been if I'd taken more stuff with me. But that was only a minor thing. I mean, looking back on in terms of a race, it's probably the best race I've ever had, ever. I didn't need to spend as much time out there as I did. But I mean, you know, with all the mayhem that was going on in airports last summer.
Yeah.
You know.
Maybe it was no harm.
Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't, strictly speaking, necessary.
And just finally then, before we wrap up, could you advise our audience, how would they get involved in trail or mountain running, or where would they go?
There's a few people in the club. There's me, there's Peter Doyle, Matt Bush, there's Greg Robbins. You know, also I'd say Imre. Imre's doing races all the time. In the summer, there's races every Wednesday. There's multiple races on the weekend. Also, Imre is very much encourages carpooling. So the nice thing about carpooling, you get to know people and all that as well. So I'd encourage people to try it out. Locally, Ardgillan is great. I do a lot of running in Ardgillan, you know, and kind of Ardgillan park run, by the way, is really hard. It's great local hill. So I would suggest that you should contact some of us, some of the names I just mentioned, and tag along on some training runs. Or else tag along to some Wednesday evening races. They're great. As I said, they're great crack. They're much more sociable than road running. Because,
yeah.
You know, on a road run, people all go home after the race. But that's not the way it is in hill running.
Okay. Well, I think there's food for thought there for anybody listening and who wants to participate in mountain or trail running. Thank you very much, Stephen, for coming in. And best of luck if you try and do this all again next year. Thanks again. All right.
So I'd like to finish by thanking all our listeners for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the show. In our next episode, you can look forward to an interview with very well-known nutritionist and dietitian Aoife Hearn, who will talk to us about her experiences as a track sprinter, her spell in the US on an athletic scholarship, and of course, sports nutrition. We'll also be joined by Lusk AC club member Mark Dunn, who will talk to us about running whilst managing diabetes. I'd like to again thank our guests, Matt Shields and Stephen Brennan. and all the team that are working on the Lusk AC podcast, Colin Brown, Julie Griffith, Nicole Hodson, Dwayne Moore, Daniel O'Brien, Sean Smith, and of course, Colin Wall. Our juvenile athletes are currently competing in the Dublin Indoor Juvenile Championships, so the very best of luck to our young athletes in the final 2 days of events. Thanks to all the parents and coaches for their invaluable help. Also, best of luck to our athletes competing in the Garristown Windmill 10K, which is the men's Dublin Championships, and also in the Bohemian Half Marathon. So please do rate the podcast and spread the word. We really appreciate your continued support.